So I've been taking a bit of a turn in the topics that I'm interested in, and I'm moving toward this territory that's often considered to be anti-psychiatry. And I probably mentioned this before, but I really hate that term. And there's other terms that I've been sort of researching on the internet as I sort of try to, you know, categorize what I'm doing in a more accurate way. And I'm just equally unsatisfied with all these terms. So, you know, anti-psychiatry, for obvious reasons, just, I don't know, it just feels like it's not saying really what it is, just what it's against. And then there are other similar terms like critical psychiatry. So that's kind of a more academic term, I guess, simply meaning it's a, you know, a critical perspective on the mainstream of psychiatry. But I think that suffers from some of the same limitations that anti-psychiatry does. It's just, you know, defining itself sort of in opposition to this thing called psychiatry. And there's other even more sort of lofty and academic, I would say, pedantic type of terms like post-psychiatry, which is really, I guess, rooted in the postmodernist philosophy and stuff. So all that stuff really does not appeal to my pragmatic nature at all. You know, I don't want to, you know, define myself in opposition to something. I want to sort of define myself in a more positive way, but also in a term that's going to have some sort of, you know, recognition and, you know, by others. So this is something I struggle with all the time with other terms, like the term atheist, for instance. It just always seemed to be a ridiculous thing to identify with. You know, like myself, I'm not religious at all. And I guess, you know, of all the terms that are out there, probably atheist would be, you know, one of the more accurate ones to describe my point of view on religion. But that's only because it's, you know, there are not many good choices out there. I just think, you know, to define yourself as anti-religion or atheist doesn't make sense. In the same way, it wouldn't make sense to, you know, have to define yourself in terms of everything you're against. I mean, I'm an anti-conspiracy theorist. I'm anti the belief that, you know, aliens have infiltrated our society. It doesn't make sense. You'd be in this infinite loop of having to define yourself as against everything that's out there, which, I don't know, doesn't really make sense to me. So as opposed to saying I'm an atheist, I just prefer to say I'm just reasonable. You know, I'm a critical thinker. I'm an evidence-based thinker. Something along those lines, or it's describing what I actually believe and what I value, and not what I'm against. So this applies to so many things. I don't know if it's just the English language, but it's annoying. Even when you hear people refer to themselves as partners, you know, romantic partners. Yeah, I totally get that. You know, that husband and wife, you know, those aren't terms that are inclusive when you're talking about people that are gay or lesbian. Or so partner is something that's designed to be more inclusive, but it just, you know, it sounds like there's a business transaction happening there, which, you know, just seems, I don't know, aesthetically, I don't like that term at all. I think that's the problem I have with some of these other terms. Aesthetically, atheist, anti-psychiatrist, critical psychiatrist, all these things just don't have a ring to it. They're not really hitting it for me. They don't appeal to both my aesthetic sense and my pragmatic sense. So in the relationship realm, I think, you know, there's already a perfect term that's inclusive and, you know, and would work wonderfully, and that term would be lover. And yet you can't really use that term because it just somehow took is taken on, you know, weird connotations over the decades or whatever. So I mean, it's really just in a pragmatic and aesthetic sense that you can't get a better term than that. You know, this person's my lover, they love me, I love them. It covers all the bases, it's inclusive, and yet it somehow has this weird scandalous element to it where, you know, it only applies to sexual encounters or even extramarital sexual encounters, like someone is my lover, we were lovers. It just has this sort of scandalous implication to it, which is too bad, because then you can't, that's really the best term, but then you're stuck with all these other terms that just don't do it. And I could go on forever. You know, spiritual, that's another one I can't stand. It just has so many limitations. So again, you know, I wouldn't consider, well, I consider myself an atheist if I'm stuck with that term, but I'm also, you know, really, I'm a spiritual seeker. So again, how do I reconcile that? I'm interested in spiritual experience, and yet I'm a quote unquote atheist. And I think this is a limitation in the language again. I think there are terms that are out there that are good, but they also have liabilities. I think transpersonal is a better term than spiritual. But, I don't think it sounds very jargony, maybe. People just, I don't think would go for that. And, you know, spiritual is a term that is in use, and, you know, that has, I guess, some advantages. It's a term people understand. So I guess you can either try to rehabilitate a word, like I think some have done, to try to rehabilitate the term spiritual so it doesn't have all these spooky connotations. I guess you could try to rehabilitate a word like lover or something like that as well. But just to get back to the anti-psychiatry thing, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, the name of my site is Integral Health Resources, and I thought a lot about that term. And again, I struggled with, for a long time, what am I going to go with here? There are so many other terms that are more recognizable, like, say, holistic. That sort of also has that same connotation of a whole person approach. But there's just something new agey, or I don't know what it is, holistic health. It brings up things in my mind that I don't want to associate myself with. And, biopsychosocial, I think, really, you know, is where I align myself with as in terms of my mental health philosophy. But it's just such a mouthful, you know, biopsychosocial. I mean, can't there be a term that just covers that? And that's where I thought integral comes in. But then, you know, just as I started using that term, then the term integrative sort of, you know, started becoming a popular thing. But, so I was going to switch the title of the website to Integrative Health, but then integrative then takes on its own specific meaning that doesn't quite get at what I want. And so, you know, so I've stuck with integral for now. And I think the problems with that term is that nobody else is really using it. And the few that are, I also kind of don't necessarily want to associate my point of view totally with these other folks that have embraced the term. For instance, Ken Wilber, the philosopher, is probably the most well-known person that uses the term integral, and he has an integral philosophy. And, you know, while I do embrace some of the general outlines of his theory, and I have, you know, his four-quadrant model on the site, which is essentially a biopsychosocial cultural model. So the biopsychosocial cultural, those are the four quadrants. And it's a bit more comprehensive and really, really thought out, I think, better laid out than just a biopsychosocial model. And so I do like that. And that's why, one of the reasons I've embraced it. And as I've mentioned before on the site, that I went to graduate school years ago at the California Institute of Integral Studies, and there was an integral philosophy that was the basis of that school's mission, which is, you know, sort of a body mind spirit type of integration. And I'm down with all that. So anyway, I've completely rambled about the struggle with the terms here, but so I've been focusing a lot on critical psychiatry, I guess, over the past week, and I've discovered a person from the UK by the name of Joanna Moncrief, who is a psychiatrist, and she's part of something called the Critical Psychiatry Network. And I don't know too much about it. I think it sort of rose up in opposition to some British political things, like maybe there's a Mental Health Act or something there that that they were opposing. But in general, it's a group of psychiatrists that has a you know, this critical point of view that's very similar to my own in terms of, you know, a more broad critical mental health vision. And specifically, Dr. Moncrief, I think, has done something very interesting and useful in that she has focused on the difference between a disease-oriented approach and a drug-oriented approach to drug treatment in psychiatry. And this is one of the things I think that people get most confused by when either in the field of psychiatry or counseling or any mental health field, the role that drugs play and the sort of the biological piece of the biopsychosocial model. And the confusion seems to stem from this idea that psychiatric drugs, to the extent that they work and help people, that they're working on some disease mechanism. So that's the disease-oriented model that Dr. Moncrief talks about, this idea that, you know, an antidepressant, the reason they classify it as such is that that medicine is supposedly working on the underlying mechanisms of the disease or disorder of depression. And so for years, the popular theory was that serotonin was the sort of mechanism. There was something going wrong with the serotonin neurotransmitter system, and that these SSRIs, these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, what they were doing was sort of fixing the serotonin imbalance, and that's why people that were depressed were being helped by these meds. And there's similar disease-oriented models for other medicines, like, you know, antipsychotic medication, for instance. The reason it's called that is because it's supposedly working on some process in the brain that's causing psychosis, and so that's why you would take an antipsychotic. And it's the same for an anti-anxiolytic. Generally, it's the idea, you know, that's the idea is that the drug is helping people that are suffering from specific problems. Therefore, the drug must be reversing or working to normalize the brain systems that are connected to these problems. So what Dr. Moncrief has done, and I'll put a link to her talk that I watched the other day and her website and so forth. She's distinguished between this disease-oriented model and a drug-oriented model, or a drug-centered model, I think is the language she uses. So you have the disease-centered model of drug treatment psychiatry and the drug-centered model. And the drug-centered model, I guess, was the model that existed prior to the 1950s, where drugs were just classified on the basis of the effects that they had. So you had sedatives and stimulants, and they were categorized as such because, you know, stimulants stimulated the nervous system. So they were just thought of as stimulants. And a sedative, what it did was dampen, you know, people's emotion and cognitions. And so when people were taking medications for psychiatric problems, if they were taking a sedative and they're, you know, psychiatric problem improved, there was a drug-centered model sort of implied there that, you know, it wasn't that the sedative was reversing a chemical imbalance and normalizing a chemical imbalance. It was just this idea that the sedatives affect all people. They have psychoactive effects on the brain and body. Whether or not you have, you know, a psychiatric problem, they're going to have effects. And for some people that are having specific difficulties, these effects of sedatives may be helpful in some respects. So if you're, you know, if you're psychotic, your brain is spinning and you're having some sort of issues because your mind is operating in such a way that it's causing you suffering, then taking a sedative and dampening your thought processes or dampening your emotional response to things may be helpful for you. But that doesn't mean that these drugs are targeting a specific disease mechanism. It's just that the effects of the drugs happen to be helpful for this particular person. And that sounds simple, but that distinction between a disease-oriented model and a drug-centered model clears up a lot of confusion, because you constantly hear people fall into this trap of assuming that psychiatric drugs are curing a disease or balancing a chemical imbalance. And the reason that's important is because if you think you have a disease or a disorder that, say, an antidepressants are curing or treating, you're going to take those meds if you're depressed. I mean, you're going to be much more likely to take them despite the possible negative effects of the drug because, you know, you're thinking, hey, I've got this disorder and this disease and these drugs are treating or curing this. Of course, I'm going to take it. And you might choose differently, though, if it was presented to you by your psychiatrist that, okay, Bob, I understand that you're feeling depressed and there's a series of drugs that there's a particular drug that is going to have a cascade of effects on you, likely. I mean, here's how this particular drug, Prozac or whatever it is, affects you or affects people in general. It might lower your sex drive, dampen your thoughts a little bit, dampen your emotional reactivity to things. And for some people, you know, who are depressed, this actually alleviates some of the suffering of depression. For others, you know, it may make you feel dead inside, or, you know, you might have suicidal thoughts or other negative side effects. So, you know, these drugs affect different people in different ways. For some people that are struggling with depression, they have some positive effects that make them overall feel better, and it's for them worth it. So, you know, what do you think? Do you want to try this? If it's presented that way, you may decide that you would want to try psychotherapy first or some sort of other way of approaching the problem. I don't think you would be as likely to just blindly accept the drug treatment as a first line of treatment if you were given that more accurate presentation of what the drugs might do. Because the truth is, at least as I understand it, and as Dr. Moncrief presents it, is there's not evidence that psychiatric drugs are treating an underlying disease mechanism. The serotonin theory of depression, as I understand it and read the literature, has been debunked. And it's, you know, you can debunk it simply by noting that, you know, people can get depressed through a variety of ways and mechanisms, and that some people that may have low serotonin levels can report depression. Some people with high serotonin levels can also report depression, or perfectly normal serotonin levels. So it isn't the serotonin levels that is the cause or the common thread that, you know, connects people that are depressed. It's just too complex and varied a thing. It's just that for some people, the whole range of effects that an antidepressant has, which, you know, one of them is changing the serotonin levels, but there's there's other effects. And if somebody who's not depressed takes antidepressants, you'll note some effects. For some people, that overall it's a positive, it's a net gain, it's worth it. Same with antipsychotics. I mean, I have met many people who feel better taking the antipsychotics. And they presume, because I'm sure that this is the, you know, this disease-centered model is what was presented to them, that it's, you know, it's treating their chemical imbalance, that chemical imbalance that's causing their schizophrenia, for instance. But that's not, that's a presumption that one shouldn't make. You should just note that, you know, people that have certain constellations of psychotic symptoms might overall feel better when they have, you know, their thoughts and emotions dampened by certain classes of drugs. And it's just an effect of the drug. It's not, you know, it's not a reversal of a disease. And that's why, you know, many different kinds of drugs may actually help with somebody who's having a certain kind of problem. Like, for instance, anxiety. I mean, we can note, you know, with just the common experience of, you know, social anxiety, for instance, can be improved when you just drink alcohol. I mean, a lot of us could be anxious when we walk into a party or when we're about to perform, and then we have a few drinks and we feel less anxious and we're suddenly more comfortable. I think few of us would contend that drinking alcohol was reversing a disease of anxiety or a chemical imbalance of anxiety. It's just that, you know, alcohol has psychoactive effects. It has other effects that, you know, like giving you a hangover and you know, certain toxicity or whatever that may, in the grand scheme of things, not be worth it. But maybe in the short term, it is worth it to have a few drinks and feel a little more comfortable in a social setting. Likewise, with marijuana, people that are anxious, people that have ADHD, a number of things might feel better when they're smoking marijuana. But it doesn't follow that, you know, that the mechanism of their distress has anything to do with THC levels. It's just that THC has certain effects, and for some people, these effects improve their distress levels in certain ways. So I don't know, maybe to others, this doesn't seem like a earth-shattering distinction to make, this disease-centered model and this drug-centered model. But to me, it makes a lot of sense, and it's sort of at the heart of what's been frustrating me for a while, ever since I've become a mental health professional and worked in psychiatric hospitals and been going through graduate school and seeing how just the confused understanding and the misapplication of this the biological aspects of mental health problems. You know, where you can recognize that, you know, everything that we do, the way we think, feel, and behave, is always reflected in our nervous system and in our brains. And that people who are suffering, you know, there is a biological component. Things are happening in their brain and biology that correspond to how they feel. But that doesn't mean that they're suffering from a disease or a quote-unquote imbalance. And it certainly doesn't mean that taking drugs or directly manipulating their physiology is the most appropriate treatment. And of course, I've gone on and on and on about this in other episodes, so I suppose I won't totally beat that dead horse there. So yeah, I'll post a link to Joanna Moncrief's presentation that I thought was really interesting, and her explanation of this distinction between the disease-oriented and the drug-oriented models, which I think, you know, she does a much better job than I'm doing here. And yeah, I hope that it's helpful. And if anybody out there can think of a better way to, or better term to frame this whole bag here that I'm interested in, a term that kind of hits the biopsychosocial and integrative and holistic and integral and all these things, but just, you know, a simple term that's sort of to the point, or even a term that, you know, describes somebody who's against some of the biases and limitations of the mainstream psychiatric and mental health model, but wants to, doesn't want to define themselves in an antagonistic terminology. I don't know, there's got to be a better term out there to describe everything that I'm interested in on this website. So you can let me know on Twitter, @integral_health, @integral_health. I always forget that little at sign. Or email me, bob@integralhealthresources.com, or comment on the website, on any of the blog posts, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or respond to any feedback anybody might have. So, as usual, just a total extemporaneous, disjointed, hopefully not too nonsensical podcast episode, but that's it for this week. Hope everybody out there is doing well, and I'll talk to you next time.